from Los Angeles, California is here, and Doug R. and Carla R. from Tujunga, California are going to be here, and they're going to share about sponsorship. So, Carla?
Okay.
All
right. Good morning, everybody. My name's Carla Rowland. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Carla.
Well, I didn't need to keep that close, do I? I love sponsorship. I love to be a sponsor. I love being sponsored. It's kind of ironic, you know, coming from such a secretive place. But I think I'm lucky when my sobriety date, September 25th, 1987. So in 28 years, my idea and my experience with sponsorship have changed. And I'm not one of those people that you'll hear say either that I sponsor the way I was sponsored, because things have changed. My first sponsor was 12 years sober when I got here. And so there was some real basic stuff, but then I've grown. I'm 28 years sober, and I've learned some things about what works and what doesn't work. And I'm not trying to make them be like me. For a while I did, you know, and that was just, boy, drove them crazy, drove me crazy, made me sick. But when sponsorship is working, there's this thing that goes on, this mirroring kind of thing, this Me Too kind of thing that brought us in the first place, right? The thing that attracted me to Alcoholics Anonymous in the first place. And I always like to say that the only fifth step I like better than mine is yours, you know, because when we're sharing that kind of thing, you mirror back to me sometimes things that I didn't really get about myself, that when I see in you, I think, oh my God, first of all, I didn't realize that was happening. Is the contrast okay? There. John's adjusting the screen, and I want to make sure my visual... Well, wait, keep me in the picture. Don't get me... Okay. But there's this mirroring thing that goes on, this re-identification that goes on. I mean, initially, first of all, when we're new, I needed to be identified as an alcoholic. I needed to know that this is where I belong. Now, I kind of had an idea. You know, the shingle on your door said AA, and I was sent to an AA meeting, and I was having a real hard time not drinking. You know, I couldn't stop drinking. That's what brought me here. I could not stop drinking. And I had been able to quell anything else that I had done, but I couldn't stop drinking. And when my next-door neighbor sent me up to an AA meeting, that was a shingle on the door, and that's what you were talking about when we got in, and when I walked in the door. And so there was that first initial identification, but then that big book is big. You know, there's a lot of stuff, and I was pretty muddled, and I needed somebody who could walk me through that information and sort of help me sort it out, coming through the steps. So I heard AA on a large scale in the meetings, just enough. I mean, I don't believe that we stay sober on meetings alone, but they sure help. Meetings were the gateway for me. They were where I found out about what's a sponsor, what's a step, how do we do this thing. They gave me the questions, you know, and then a lot of times they've given me the answers too. I just believe that what happens in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous at any given time and place, just like this morning, something's happening. Something's happening in each one of us where the great puzzle master, that power greater than ourselves, has put us together for some, and each of us might walk out going, wow, did you hear them say that? And someone else is saying, no, but I heard them say this. And it was just exactly the right thing that we needed to go another day or another hour or something without having to take a drink. And more than that, eventually to live a really flourishing life. And in the beginning, for me, it was a lot about survival. And I'd leave my home group, where I just sat next to my sponsor or across the table from her, and that meeting would be out at 10 o'clock, and at 10:20 I'd be home and I'd be on the phone with her again, you know. And she didn't say things like, "God damn it, I just saw you. Didn't I just see you?" You know, she said, "Man, you're going to get this thing, aren't you? You're going to get this thing." And over time, I have been First and foremost, I believe my job is to qualify you as an alcoholic. If that's what you are, if you are an alcoholic and I bring the information to you and you can identify yourself as an alcoholic, then we're on the road. Then we're doing something together. And depending on the state that we're in, too, when we get here, some people can't muddle through that book. They just can't. You know, I couldn't remember the first paragraph I read. I would sit there, and it was good for me to be in book studies, but I needed to hear things like, show up and do a commitment, make some coffee, you know, dump some ashtrays, all of that stuff. Sounds like, what the hell does that have to do with sobriety? But it had everything to do with sobriety. It had me showing up to things that I ordinarily wouldn't show up to, and then it put me in a posture of hearing this message. And Bill Wilson always said that the main purpose of an AA group is a clear presentation of the steps. And I believe as a sponsor, that's my job as well, a clear presentation of the AA program, which the program I was taught was the steps. The fellowship is a people governed by the traditions. And so all of those work together. And then over time, even though the stakes for me, the reason that I want to stay in fit spiritual condition, which doesn't mean I don't cry or I don't have a bad day or anything. A fit spiritual condition means I'm going to be able to weather that. You know, whether I like the day or I don't like the day, I'm going to be able to weather that and flourish and learn something without having to have a drink. Those are the stakes for me. You will never hear me say that this is not about alcohol. You'll never hear me say that. All through our book, it says, remember, we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Later in the discussion of the 10th step, it says, alcohol is a subtle foe. If I fail to maintain a fit spiritual condition, I could be looking at that first drink again. And besides that, even when I'm in fit spiritual condition, even when I'm fit, I've heard people talk about having just a really, really, really great day. And so not a cloud on the horizon. We were talking about that at breakfast this morning. Not a cloud on the horizon. They walked out the door and had a drink. So I'll never be so fit, so spiritually, emotionally, or otherwise, that I can take that first drink. And I believe that it's that in that interaction of sponsorship and then fellowship, you know, we have a few friends. I needed to have a few friends, too, to talk about our sponsor. You know, and either that or to get ready to go talk to our sponsor, right? But what happens in that little group, it's like it's still fellowship. It's still me, too. It's still me, too. You know, and there's something about that makes life palatable, makes it, you know, I just believe for me, AA put me on the game board for life. You know, we're not a different species, but as an alcoholic, I got to take care of some things before I can go out there and face that world. And here's where we did it. And I can think weird and I can share all those weird thoughts and my fears, most of all my fears, the things that I don't want to face, and I share it with you guys, and you say, yeah, me too. The big book talks about a person being just properly armed with the facts about herself, an alcoholic being properly armed with the facts about himself. The first lady who delivered the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to me, the really clear message, did not become my sponsor. She was my next door neighbor, but she delivered the message. She talked about her drinking, and I had seen her with my own eyes around the apartment complex. There were like four apartments, but it's just a long walk for me. But that in itself told a story. So we just never know. I believe it's my job to be properly armed with the facts about myself. I can carry this message, and then what they do with it is really, I believe my best job is not to teach them how to use my intuition, but to teach them how to use theirs. And that's been through these steps, for them to have an experience. And I say this a lot ad nauseum, but it's really the truth for me today. And the best way I know how to say it is that our founders did not say, hey, if you take these steps, you'll get to maybe one day call somebody and they'll know somebody who had a friend who one time had a spiritual awakening. They didn't say that. They said, if you do this, you'll get this too. And see, that's what I needed. I needed to have this too. And so I lay it before the person sitting in front of me, And if they want to do it, then they pick it up, just like I had to. And I have had to learn more than one time in my sobriety that I can't do it for them. I can't be more invested in their sobriety than they are. And otherwise, you know, it's frustrating. It doesn't work. And so we get sick. I've had to say things like, you know, you're getting sicker, I'm getting sicker, this isn't working. I'm not kicking you out of my life, but what we're doing here is not working. And sometimes it changes and sometimes it doesn't. But there's something about this truth-telling that goes on between people that helps us get well. And like I always heard, one day doctor, next day patient, you know, we wear different hats. We help each other. God doesn't put two people together to help just one. And I think sponsorship is a great privilege. Bill, when he asked to go to Towns Hospital, he said he asked for the privilege of telling his story. So not so much an honor, although it's nice to be asked, but the privilege, because what happens in this interaction is something magnificent. It's not something that we could have come up on our own, I don't think. So anyway, it's a blessing to be here. I want to thank the committee for having us, and I'm going to turn this on over to Doug, I guess.
We're going to knock something over, I'm sure. My name's Doug Rowell. I'm a grateful alcoholic. It's an honor and a privilege to be up here and be able to do this. And you know what? I love this format. If anybody just walked in late or didn't hear it when it was first announced, we're each going to talk a little bit about our experience with sponsorship. And then there's a microphone over here. And the best part is if anybody has questions that you think we might answer, like we were some kind of expert or something, you know. But what we're pretty good at is not drinking, and some of the experiences and some of the practices that go along with helping us to support our sobriety. But when people from the audience, for lack of a better term, ask questions, it brings a new energy into it. And a lot of people who have the question don't feel like asking it, somebody else might ask a question. So that's why I love this format. And I don't know, my first sponsor I got, I called because I knew I needed a sponsor. I'd been going to AA, I'll talk about it later tonight, but I'd been going to AA for 8 months, and I wasn't sober. I started to fall in love with AA, but I didn't know if I could get this thing, and I was afraid to stop drinking. I mean, because it was like, what if I stop drinking, and then it doesn't work, you know? And I would have wasted all that valuable drinking time. But when I finally did try some of the things, particularly prayer, and had an experience. I called a guy that was, actually I called several people that were going to this men's stag that I used to go to, and the first one who was home, I asked him to be my sponsor. and it's funny, Jim hadn't done a four-step. He was sober about a year and a half, and he sponsored me for 5 years. And I did my four-step before. By the time I got sober, I was anxious to do this thing. And when we started talking about sponsorship, he said, yeah, I'll do that. But I got to tell you, I haven't done an inventory. And I said, well, you know, in the first 164 pages in the big book, the word sponsor doesn't appear. I didn't really know that at the time. I wasn't somebody who stayed up studying the big book. But I thought, well, I can do my inventory with somebody else. And I got somebody, a guy with 20 years of sobriety who had, you know, had some experience. And I did my fifth step with him. And I went through the steps. I was actually ahead of my sponsor. But this one thing, my sponsor got me to get commitments in meetings. He got me to go to meetings. He got me to get involved in H&I hospitals and institutions, which are some places they call it corrections, and take the message. You know, and help to be of service in AA. And that's what Jim did for the first 5 years. When I was 5 years sober, I ran into a guy who actually was sober. He's coming up on 20 years. It was just a week short of his 20th birthday party he was having for himself. And he was the man who bought me my first hard liquor when I was 18 years old, or 19 years old, 18. And I had gone to work at on an ambulance, and I had really just started drinking. I was a beer drinker. I never had a drink until I was 18. And then so I went to work at this ambulance, and the guy who was the driver was an alcoholic, and he bought me my first hard liquor. So if anybody ever was in an emergency and called an ambulance in 1964 in Santa Ana, California, I want to make amends. Because Vince and I were drunk. We never lost a patient that wasn't already almost dead when we picked him up. So anyway. But Vince was sponsored by Clancy, and he got me into a different kind of AA than I was used to, and sponsored me for about 3 years. And then turned out we had reestablished our friendship, and Vince couldn't be friends with somebody he sponsored, so I said, I'd rather be friends. So I got another sponsor, sponsored me for 7 years, and then he moved away. Then I got another guy named Clint Hodges to sponsor me, and he was a great sponsor for 3 years, and he got sick. And had to let, he was sponsored a lot of people, and he had to let some of us go. And I got, I had heard, when I was 5 years sober, I heard a tape of a man named Dick Martin on sponsorship out of Bellevue, Nebraska. And that was the guide that I used for sponsoring people. Dick was pretty clear about you don't cookie cutter sponsor. Everybody's different, and you need to listen to their stories and listen to them. Hear where they are in their sobriety, where they are in their lives, if they're working, if they're married, if they're whatever, and sponsor them individually. And he had a lot of good ideas, and I used that as a guide to sponsorship. And then when I was 18 years sober, I called. I was all of a sudden without a sponsor, and I said to a friend of mine, I think I'm going to call Dick Martin in Nebraska and ask him if he'll sponsor me. And my friend said, well, it's about damn time, you know. And so I called, and Dick was my sponsor for 11 years until he just passed last year. And he was great, and helped me so much. Just his casual take on AA. They talk about wearing this thing like a loose garment, casual but firm. And after that, I got somebody else who was a sponsor, a friend and a sponsor of Dick's, to sponsor me. And that was a long distance relationship that didn't work out. So now my sponsor's name is Bob Fisher. He's a guy I've known since I got sober. He's been to all three of my sober weddings. And so I think this one's going to work out pretty good. But that's Carla and I both have had a lot of sponsors, and every sponsor that either one of us has had has taken us to the next level. One thing I found in sponsoring people is listening to them, and especially in a fifth step or a fifth step situation where you're listening to a personal thing and we're talking about the steps, and I've heard myself saying things that I didn't even know I knew. And it's because there's a third energy in the mix, that God is in the middle when we're one alcoholic talking to another. First time it happened to me, I was maybe a year and a half sober, and I said to a sponsee, well, you know, this whole process of these steps is about moving from a self-center towards a God center. And he went, and I thought, damn, that's right. That's true. I'll have to remember that, you know. Another time I was hearing a fifth step of a guy who had been molested as a child. His aunt started having sex relationships with him when he was like 7 years old. And his father was complicit in it. And that's the way he grew up, that way. And there was a lot involved in it. I'm not getting into all that. But he felt a little guilty about it because he used that situation at times to his advantage. And so when we started seriously talking about it, he tried to make jokes about it first. But I said, no, this is some serious stuff. that's the farthest thing from any experience I had growing up. And I didn't really know how to deal with it. It scared me. I thought maybe this guy should get a new sponsor. And he said, well, but I'm trying to look at what my part in it is. And I said, your part in it isn't using the situation to your advantage. That's what people do. This was done to you. You really literally are a victim. Your part in it is holding on to the resentment. You have to forgive your aunt and your father, not because they deserve to be forgiven, because you deserve to not have to carry that burden. And there was another one of those things where I thought, I don't know where that came from, you know. But it's God being in the mix. And then another guy that I sponsor said to me one time, okay, I need to run something by you. If I pay for sex, am I being unfaithful? And here again, you know, God in the mix. I answered it with an answer I didn't even know. I said, well, I'll tell you, Jerry, not our friend Jerry here, but... I'll tell you, the way I look at it, you're asking the wrong person. You need to run this by your wife, you know, and because if she's okay with it, I don't care. Once again, I thought, yeah, Mom, a good sponsor, you know. But I think the result of that and any success that I have in sponsors. But I only sponsor 8 guys, and I've sponsored 8 guys for a long time. Usually, when one leaves to go to a good sponsor, some other bozo comes, steps in, and it seems to stay right about at 8. You know, that's the level that I can handle. And some guys I sponsor a whole bunch of people. You know, that some people will go, well, I like what Doug has, but I think I'll get it secondhand through Seamus, you know. But I think any time that it turns out that I'm a good sponsor, and a good sponsor is somebody who doesn't drink when you know, no matter what the sponsee does, is because every day starts out on my knees. Good morning, Father. Thank you for another day. Help me to see your will for me today and give me the power to carry that out. So thanks for letting me share that with you.
Good morning, Ronald White. I'm an alcoholic. I love being with Doug and Carla. I've known them for quite a number of years, and I always get something when they share. And I was listening very carefully when Carla was talking about that description in the big book, because Doug said that there's nowhere in the first 164 pages where it talks about the word sponsor. And, you know, we've developed this thing in Alcoholics Anonymous, where sponsorship is so very vital to our recovery. You ask where that might that come from. Well, there are descriptions all throughout the big book of the kind of person that we would have an effective approach with. And it talks about that person who is properly armed with facts about themselves, who seems to have gone through the same difficulty, seems to have had the same difficulty, whose decorum shouts, you know, that they're a man or woman with an answer, right? And it's important for me. That's why whenever I share, and if you heard me share last night, I like to share what I used to be like, because I think that I didn't know all those facts about myself before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. Those things that I shared about myself, I learned from you guys, from this introspection that we do. I was talking with my sponsor Ed about that this morning, this self-searching process that our recovery program requires through a fourth step, through the 6 and 7, through doing 8 and 9, through going through all the steps, this searching, because it's in the searching, I think, that we get it, this connection with this power that allows me to stay sober. The first sponsor I had in Alcoholics Anonymous was a guy named Clarence. Clarence was in my home group, 9604 South Figueroa. And Clarence wasn't a very educated man. He wasn't somebody who was, he was quite unlike me. You know, very, And I don't say that in the sense of saying that Clarence was dumb or anything like that. Clarence was a smart guy. He had a lot of common sense. He had but he wasn't like hadn't gone to college, hadn't gone to law school, hadn't done all the kinds of academic things that I had done. But see, it was my intellect that had me in this prison all this time, and I needed somebody who was grounded, somebody who was very, he had the ability to be plain, to be simple, to not have airs about him, to not have, these affectations of, I know this and I know that, if that makes sense. I don't know if I'm making any sense to you, but I needed somebody who was the opposite of me, to allow me to be able to look within myself. Clarence didn't know nothing about the steps. He hadn't done it, I didn't know that at the time that I asked him. All I knew is he was a guy that when he got to the podium at my home group, he always said something that made my head nod. And he always made me feel like I'm in the right place. So I asked Clarence to be my sponsor. And so Clarence, he did some things like some of the guys in my group did who really, they saw the steps on the wall. They really hadn't gone through the process. He asked me to do some writing on the first step, he asked me to just do some things that really aren't in the book, but they really were helpful to me in the beginning. It helped me start writing. It helped me start looking at myself. And Clarence had me sit, when we got to step two, he had me sit in the parking lot behind our home group. You'd have to know 9604 South Figueroa. It's located. Figueroa is what we call a hole stroll. It's where all the prostitutes, in Los Angeles, they frequent, let's say, where they ply their trade. And 9604 is right plumb in the middle of the action. And it has an alley behind our home group, and there's a parking lot. And Clarence and I sat in his car in this alley behind our home group in this prostitute-infested area. And he asked me to hold his hands and pray. Now, I don't know about y'all, but me sitting in a car with a guy holding hands, and there's something that happened. When we held hands, when I humbled myself, this simple act that didn't seem like it should take so much courage, where we held hands in that parking lot and we prayed. And so Clarence did something for me that I didn't even know how important it would be for me to be able to make this connection. It demonstrated for me the willingness I had, right? Because I didn't know how willing I really was at the time to do everything that it took to remain sober. And that was something that was important for me. It was another step in the searching that was necessary. Clarence was my guide at the time. I'm involved in a convention back in Southern California right now where I'm in charge of the workshops, and I had to do all these different topics. And one of the topics that I picked for the workshops was sponsorship, God or guide. And the reason that I did that, I put sponsorship, God or guide, because I know it's so very often in Alcoholics Anonymous, we seem to get it mixed up, where the sponsor starts acting like the God instead of the guide. And I know it's just as important for me looking for a sponsor and me sponsoring. There's this symbiotic relationship that has to happen where I don't try to act like I'm smarter than I am and try to demonstrate, I'm the psychologist. I know nobody else can relate to this, but I think I'm a family therapist. I think I'm a, I'm a financial, financial planner. I'm, where for every aspect of my sponsee's life or whatever, I'm going to be this life coach where I'm going to be giving all this, cogent advice. I'm like, things come out of me that I don't even know where they come from. Except I need to really know that all I'm there to do is guide the person to look within and hopefully expand their consciousness so that they will surround themselves with enough other people who know these different areas and they're able to, you know, tap in. Because I know that all I am is a guide. My phone, you might not be able to catch me at some point in time, and I know that really God's the answer, but sometimes you need to have somebody else to hear God's message through. So connect with other people in the fellowship. Connect with other people in the fellowship who are also grounded, who also know some things about themselves, who are properly armed with facts about themselves, and in that way, we will know that, you know, we're able to help the person and be most effective. I sponsor a lot of people, men and women. You know, I've heard people say that, you know, the men with the men, the women with the women. I don't know where that came from. I know why it's there. I know that there's this danger sometimes that when somebody is new, that this whole sexual component, and when, you know, we're not going to ignore that. We know that there's this transference when we come in here and we are so unloved, when we look for, you know, this affection and this whatever, oftentimes, you know, we can get it mixed up and folks can, just like when that lady Yvonne offered me to come to her apartment to stay there or whatever, and I thought, yeah, oh yeah. And I know, but she made it very clear what her relationship with me was, and I was grounded enough, at least, in the fellowship for me to not overstep. And I know sometimes in the sponsor situation, we can overstep. So I know myself. I know I'm a flirtatious guy. I'm a hopeless flirt, and I'm all this other kind of stuff. So I don't sponsor new women. You know, I know me. Not because of them, because I know me. And I know that, you know, the kind of guy. So any woman I sponsor usually is somebody that has at least maybe 5 years or more. And I don't use that as a hard line number. It depends on the person, and it depends on me. I know that if you know, that energy that's there, I'll be your friend, but maybe I don't need to sponsor you. And so I sponsor a lot of women who are over 10 years, over 20 years, whatever, except that's not a hard and fast rule, but I just know me. And I think it's real important, being in Alcoholics Anonymous, to know yourself. That if I'm properly armed with facts about myself, the last thing I want to do is do some action that will hurt another alcoholic, that will hurt another person. So I will always be hard on myself so that I won't hurt somebody else. And so I know if there's a danger like that, I will refer, I'll tell them, you know, look, I'll be your friend. You can always call me. You can, you know, I'll be there for advice or whatever, but I think maybe you should. And I will refer them maybe to one of the other ladies I sponsor or just somebody in the rooms that I know that I kind of have a feel that might be a good fit for that person. And I know my brother Ralph sponsors lots of women and lots of men. And so when I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had wished that I had, looking back process, there was a number of women in my home group, old-timer women and stuff, who brought out things in me in their sharing and in the way that they handled people. I wish that I had asked one of them to sponsor me because they had the ability to reach beyond this intellect that I had and reach in here. Because that's where I had that problem. I had the problem reaching because I lived so much in my head, man, that I couldn't get into my heart. And I could not really get, you know, I was one, what's wrong with me? I'm the one to go to the funerals and I can't cry. Everybody else is crying and I have to almost like pretend, you know, and force it. And what's wrong? But I'll go to a movie. And I see if they would just set funerals to soundtracks, because there's something about music, man, that can bring out, make me feel certain things, and I'll be crying like a baby, right? In movie, they touch me. So I know me, right? You know, and so I know the kind of person that I have a sponsor now who I got after Clarence. After when I was about 5 years, 4 or 5 years sober, Jerome Scott. Jerome has over 40 years right now of sobriety. He's a great guy. He was a member of my home group that I always come and share. He's a black guy who was real dark skinned, you know, just like darker than me. And I was thinking, yeah, that was, yeah, you know. Jerome. But Jerome was a guy, he wasn't somebody who had gone to college, was real educated. But Jerome was articulate. He had this way about him from the podium, and he had this thing. And see, and I had been scared to ask him. I told you how I fear rejection. That one of the reasons I didn't approach Jerome, I didn't want him to reject me. So I approached Clarence because I thought he was going to be easy, right? And it's funny how God works for you, right? Because I needed Clarence when I needed him. And then I needed Jerome when I needed him. And isn't it funny how when you get into this deal and you get right in the middle, things happen for you the way that they're supposed to happen. Just like I talked about how I wish I had, you know, approached one of those ladies. Well, I'm here today. I'm over 30 years. So obviously whatever happened was the way it was supposed to happen. And different things happen in my life. I have some long distance relationships with sponsees. My guy, Ed, who came out from Vermont, saw me at a Woodstock in New Jersey a few years ago. Ralph and I spoke at, and Ed approached me at the end. You know, if you've ever spoken, you have people approach you all the time and say, can I have your number? I think I want to call you. Okay, yeah. And I give out cards or numbers all the time, and then you get home and they don't call. Ed called me. And Ed and I have been talking. It's been almost 3 years now that we've been talking. And we talk three times. We try to talk three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. He calls me and we talk and stuff. And I was at a conference like last year in Oregon at a retreat for some recovering lawyers and judges. And I'm facilitating this retreat. And Ed and I had talked the day before and stuff. And then I'm Saturday morning, real early in the morning, I get this text from his wife, and Ed's in the hospital, right? Ed's driven a bicycle over a cliff into the river or something and almost dies, right? Banged up, just messed up, right? You know, just up. And it's incredible, these relationships that you get with people, right, where they become a part of your life, where they really become... you guys know what I'm talking about, right? You know, I had somebody approach me this morning who discussed something that they had gone through, and you have these trials and low spots that happen in your life where you can be there for people, even long distance, right? And so Ed and I were talking through his rehab and through his recovery from that injury that he had, that life-threatening injury that he had. Ed's here today, right? Almost less than a year afterwards, after going through all kinds of rehab and all kinds of stuff, right? And it's amazing, this process, that he would fly up just to see me, you know, be able to do, but it's so funny. Ed, I'm about to tell some of your stuff, and I shouldn't. Because Ed's been able to do some other tremendous thing. As a result of our relationship, he's doing some things, you know, that are amazing. And so all this stuff works together. The sponsorship thing, it's not a mystery. It's something that's very important. It's something that's very vital. Except I know the most important thing a sponsor can do for me is point me within, is have me look at myself, and then ask me to do the same with somebody else. To ask me to do the same with somebody else. Everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous has been given a gift. And the way that we keep the gift is by giving it away. Now, some people aren't good sponsors. Some people aren't good at sponsorship, and their gift might be in some other form of service. But guess what? Don't shortchange yourself in this process. Don't start thinking, oh, I can't do that, or I'm not good. It's just like people who think, I can't be a good parent. I don't know nothing about you don't know one till you have one, you know, and so at least try. You know, the main thing is don't harm another, and as long as you're not harming another, as long as you're trying to help somebody or whatever, you can't be a bad sponsor. If you're screwing it up, they're going to get somebody else anyway. You know, I don't know this thing about firing a sponsor or doing whatever. I haven't received my first paycheck yet, you know, and so, you know. And if somebody wants to have somebody else sponsor them, then so be it. God gave me that gift of being able to be with you and try to share with you during that time period. If it's not working out, again, I don't want to harm anybody. If I'm not helping you, if you don't believe I'm helping you, please talk to somebody else that will help you. That's enough from me. Thank you.
All right, does anybody have any questions? If you do, there's a microphone right here. Awesome.
My name's Rick. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Rick.
Thank you very much for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. There's a question I have. Our big book talks about working with others. And within that chapter, it talks a lot about the alcoholic and then also talking to the family. I'd love to hear your experience of sponsoring the new person, and then have you had an opportunity where the family wants to talk to you, and how did you handle that? Thanks.
Anybody have
that? I've got a brief. Just briefly, you know, that does not happen to me a lot. I mostly interact with the alcoholic. Just circumstantially, it's not avoided, but it just doesn't happen a lot, although I meet their spouses and things like that. But initially, there were some young women that I was sponsoring, and I was pretty new, too, and their moms would call me. And it's a kind of a tough line to toe where, you know, you want to be, I just kept referring them to Al-Anon, and you want to be open and accessible, but yet she sometimes would want to cross the line and have me break confidences, and so I really have to remember what it is I'm trying to do there, and I think that they did it. I remember an old-timer named John in our home group, who his sponsor sat down with him and his wife and made him put out all their bills and everything, and sat because he wouldn't do it without he wouldn't sit and do the bills with just his wife. So he came in kind of like that. And there's some guidance that happens like that. That's awesome. But sometimes, as far as breaking confidences and stuff like that, it can get kind of weird. But I don't I don't avoid it. But I don't have that a lot either. I can't think of.
You want to go?
It's funny, whenever I read Working with Others in the Big Book, and I see that part about I should get to know, maybe talk to the family or do something like that, Alcoholics Anonymous has changed so much, you know, from that era, from the way that it was with these recovery homes and with all kinds of things. Like, oftentimes when we see the alcoholic, they've already gone through a number of different things. And at least at the stage that I've got most of my sponsees, I haven't had the opportunity to really get involved with their families during the formulation of the relationship. I've had, like Carla, I've met some spouses later, gotten involved and become close to some of the family, some of the wives, some of the other things, except unfortunately, I haven't had the opportunity to get into that relationship of ministering to the family. See, we are so fortunate to have Al-Anon now, because I know that a lot of that writing was a precursor to Al-Anon and the relationship that people have with Al-Anons and being able to be involved with that. And that's so important that the family be ministered to as well as the alcoholic. Thank God for the Al-Anon family groups now, because I know they've stepped into the breach. Now with that.
I just like Carla and Ron, I don't usually deliberately get involved with the families, but some guys that I sponsor, a few guys that I've sponsored a long time, I know their wives, sometimes I know their mothers and fathers. But and there are people that Carla and I will have dinner with on a regular basis, where one member is sober and the other one maybe isn't in Al-Anon, maybe is. You know, when the book was written and the directions to talk to the family and get involved with the family, there was no Al-Anon. Uh, and, uh, and the communities were smaller too. I know when I used to go to a Sunday morning breakfast that was followed by a speaker meeting, and my mother and father would drive up 50 miles to come to that sometimes. Neither one of them are alcoholic, but my dad was talking to my sponsor and said, "You know, I don't understand what the deal is, like why Doug can't drink. I can have a beer or even a cocktail sometimes, and it, you know, it makes me feel good, but I don't want another one." And Stan said, the sponsor said, "Well, Doug and I have an allergy to alcohol that you don't seem to have." And my mother said, "Oh, I understand about allergies. I'm allergic, for instance, I'm allergic to lemons. If I eat anything, fish or dessert or anything that has lemon in it, my throat will swell up. I'll go in anaphylactic shock, and sometimes I have to be taken to the hospital and treated." And he said, "It's just like that. Except that if you accidentally eat some lemon and you have to go to the hospital and they treat you and you survive it, you won't be over at the supermarket in the produce department waiting for the lemons to go on sale in the morning." And so that's pretty much the best experience I had with getting involved in the family. Is there any more questions? Oh, here comes a question.
My name is Gary. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Gary.
While there's no wrong way to do the right thing, I'd be interested in your experiences with steps 4 and 5, in particular whether or not you stuck to, let's say, page 65, page 67, whether or not you augmented any of the resentments, fears, harms, sex, or used anything. But then I'd also be interested in that. The time frame, in other words, we've had some people that seem to take the process and never complete it, you know, and so is there, do you encourage the person to do it in a particular time frame? The last bit would be, when you're actually going in the fifth step, do you do it all at once, or sometimes is it necessary to space it out?
Yeah, everybody really is different in that. And I know when I was new, I really kind of couldn't wait to do the fourth step because I thought this is going to explain everything and they're going to understand why I was so horrible. And, you know, she would see the family. I mean, if you had my family, you'd drink too. And it was going to be very well laid out. So I was kind of in a hurry. There was also something inside me that felt like, after hearing what other people were saying, that it was going to clear up some things, even if I didn't like them. So there was hope. There was hope in that. So I guess I was about 6 months sober when I finished that, and then sat with my sponsor and did it. And I finished the inventory, and then it was like that following weekend that she came and sat with me, and we did the fifth step. And it was very interactive. And that's the me too. You know, that's the me too stuff. And my first fourth step wasn't columns, it was paragraphs. It was the same thing. I answered the same questions, but I just went down the line. And then when I started with another person, went down the line. So my columns went down instead of sideways. I don't think God was upset with that. But, you know, it still got to the same place. And now I've just learned a better way to get at the information, and so I share that with my sponsees. But my favorite word, I think, in the book is at right after the third step, when someone says, "When's the best time to do the inventories?" Next. We launched out, you know, and the vital step of the third, taking the vital decision of the third step could have little permanent effect, you know, might have some effect, but permanently we don't know. Everybody's grace period is a little different, you know. So, but again, it's sort of, so we know people, we know one guy who just keeps, it's almost like a game to him now. He's not done a fourth step. And I think that personally, to not do that, to keep that information from yourself, is doing yourself a disservice. But some people won't be convinced of that, and that's got to be okay. If they're involved in some other ways, I'm not the person to say how something comes at you. I'm not the person, the judge of how anybody gets their spiritual awakening. I had awakenings way before I got sober, but then I drink through them, and they wouldn't, you know. You know, took a bunch of LSD, and like my friend Sharon says, you know, saw it and then it melted. So, but to have a sustaining spiritual awakening, something that sustains that, and then, you know, to learn how to do it again, we're just learning a process. We're learning how to do this process, so then we can just do it again. I mean, in my view, now I tell them, you know, when the light comes on in me, I don't say, well, I didn't learn that when I was new, so I can't say it now. I you know, and there was a time I kind of thought that. But, you know, I tell them this, the 10th step is just doing 1 through 9 all over again. Yes, it includes 9. I mean, it includes 1. You know, we are remembering again what the stakes are if we don't do this. And so I point out these paragraphs as we're reading, and by this time, you know, we're reading the book, we're going through the instructions side by side. I believe that's my responsibility, to point this stuff out, you know, that the insanity of alcohol returns before we take a drink. You know, if I stay in that state of resentment, being the number one offender to us, if I stay in that for long, the insanity of alcohol returns. What other choice do I have? You know, I mean, and I guess there are some people who could stay real. I know some grudge holders, man, you know, sober grudge holders, bitter, twisted, you know, and I guess then maybe they'll prove that you can have a resentment and never drink. But is that what I want? You know, and Ron brought this up earlier, and, you know, there's one requirement for membership. The third tradition says there's one requirement for membership. To have a desire to stop drinking, to have a desire to recover from alcoholism, right? That's the one requirement for membership. But the requirement to consummate this process is self-searching, leveling of our pride, and the confession of our shortcomings, which, what is that? 4 and 5, right? And that, again, that's the me too, though. See, that stuff, something very special happens that when two alcoholics are sharing at that level, something very special happens. And it's different every time. And I never know, and that's the importance of me being armed with the facts about myself, too, is to be able to tell the truth. I don't have to. I do better when I don't know everything, because stuff comes out that's just flat, and it's so much more part of our soul, our human experience, than it ever could be if I made some crap up. You know, and try to be something I'm not. In fact, the beauty and the attraction to AA for me when I got here was that I didn't have to know any more than I knew or be any more than I was. God met me where I was and continues to do so. If he did that then, you know, why wouldn't God do it again when I know even a little bit more, have a little bit more experience? So as soon as possible is really the answer, but that's different for everybody.
There's a way that's laid out in the big book of doing the inventory process. And even the way it's laid out in the big book, some people disagree on. Our friend Howard P. from Arizona, just one of the most spiritual people that I know of, believes in his heart that most people do the fourth step wrong. That there's no fourth column, and that after you do, for instance, the resentment inventory, do I resent what they did, what it affected, and then you go to the next one, where was I selfish, and do the whole three columns again, then where was I self-seeking, where was I afraid, you know, where, and even his sponsor says, well, nobody believes what Howard believes, but but Howard does very well with it, and the people that he sponsors does very well with it. Clancy has these 7 questions that vaguely have anything to do with what the big book says. The first time I heard those, I thought, oh man, that's great. That's what I'm going to use to sponsor people. And then later on, I got to be like a doctor of alcoholism. self-appointed, you know, but valid. And and thought, poor Clancy, he's killing people, you know, with those seven questions. And it's just, there's so many ways. When I take somebody through the steps, the way I like to do, especially if I get a new person, in the first step, there's no way to write the first step. There's no instructions on how to write the first step. But what I'll have people do is look at the four characters in chapter 3. The man of 30 who was sober 25 years and then drank and his life went in the crapper. Jim the car salesman, Fred the accountant, and the jaywalker. And I'll have them read those stories and give me one paragraph or two on something that their drinking career reminded them of or has to do with that, just so they'll have something to get started writing, really, and I'll find out something about them. But I was sponsoring this guy who was a thoracic surgeon. He didn't get sober till he was 75 years old, and brilliant. I mean, this guy had done heart transplants. You know, he taught thoracic surgery at USC. So, I mean, this is a brilliant man. And I gave him this exercise to do, and he'd say, oh, okay, all right, I'll do that. And then I'd talk to him in a week, and I'd say, how are you doing with that first step? What is it again? And I'd tell him, you know, in chapter 3, there's the guy, oh, that's right, yeah. And I said, you want to write that down? No, I'll remember it. And so then I'd talk to him, and then, you know, a week, a month, whatever. How's that first step going? Tell me again. And go through it. At one point I said, how are you doing with the first step? Have you written it? He said, I'm at the fourth step. I've written my fourth step. Really? I said, well, I never got that first step. He said, well, Hazelden puts out these pamphlets, and I've been doing it. I said, okay, well, are you ready for a fifth step? And he said, yeah, can you come to my house? And okay, I usually don't, you know, do that, but he had a nice house in a gated community, so... and a maid that made us nice coffee and stuff. So we went, and I spent the afternoon hearing his fifth step, and it was good. He did it out of this Hazelden pamphlet, which seemed like a lot of work to me, and a lot more work than it is in the big book, but it comes down to the same end, you know. So I really don't care very much how somebody does a fourth step. I've heard some people, one guy that I sponsored said he had written over 70 pages, and I said, where are you going to publish it? And another guy that I respected a lot is gone now, said he did his fourth step on a matchbook. So I don't, you know, I mean, I don't know. I have a way to do it. I like to take people through the book. But if they have some other way of being sober and doing this process, that's really not up to me.
Okay. I forgot. What was the question again?
No, I'm sorry.
Okay. Because... it's about that fourth and fifth step, right? And about what I do with my sponsees. I try not to, as you've heard, one of my failings, one of my shortcomings is this whole intellectual thing, right? Because I will use it to elevate myself because I don't think I'm good enough in other areas. So I'll try to use that to try to make me feel better. And I need to fight that. I need to make sure that I keep that down and smash that ego so that I can stay humble. Because humility is one of the qualities that is necessary for me to stay sober. Because I'll edge God out with that ego. And I need to stay connected. So I try not to be a step technician in the sense. I'm a thumper. You know, I really believe in the big book. And I really, because it's what's made my life really come alive and what have you. And getting involved with that was something very important. My brother Ralph and I have been doing a big book workshop in Los Angeles every Sunday morning for the last 29 years, since November of 1987. We started in my mother's house, and we've been doing it ever since. We started with a group of about 10 to 12 people in our kitchen. We've now grown to over 200 people. Every Sunday morning. And as we go through this process every year, we go through line by line, paragraph by paragraph, through the first seven chapters of the book, all the way through step 12. And in that way, many of the people that I sponsor, I don't require them to be in my workshop. I like for them to be in a big book workshop somewhere so that they can be into the book and have it come alive for them. for it to be vital. Because if I can't identify my experience with the experience of what it's going in, then what's the point? All it is one of those, you know, like chapter 3 when it says we tried all these different methods. It can just be one of those books, one of those, you know, they've got all these self-help books and stuff out there and stuff. If I don't apply it into my life, you know, it has no meaning. And so when I talk with the people that I sponsor, I try to remember my experience. I didn't go through, I didn't do an inventory until I was about 2 years sober. I was in the room sounding like I'd gone through it. I read the steps on the wall. I was able to quote them, you know, I'd be able to, you know, recite them and do all that. And I'm just, you know, I'm sharing from the podium and keep coming back, you know, and I'm, you know, the steps work. If you work them, I'm not doing shit, right? You know, excuse my language. You know, I'm not really doing it, but I'm saying it, you know. And it wasn't until we had some people start taking us and walking us through the book. And I started seeing exactly how it applied to me and why it was important that I do this inventory, this self-searching process. And it started telling me a lot of things about myself. So I try to do the same thing with the people I sponsor. Try to make it real. Make it come alive. See how important it is. If I haven't gone through the first 3 steps with them, when they get to 4 and 5... the importance, the vitality of them, the real essence of them means nothing if I haven't laid the foundation with those conclusions that are reached from that first, that step one process, you know, that process of hopelessness, of powerlessness. If I don't really realize just how bad off I am, I'm not going to be launched into step two. If I don't know the reason I need to seek power, search for this power, then I'm not going to go ahead and do the searching process. So I'm real clear on why we spend so much time. There's more written in the big book on step one than any other step. You know, when we go through the doctor's opinion, Bill's story, there is a solution, more about alcohol. All those are on step one, right? You know, before we even get to chapter 4, to we agnostics. And so I make sure that I, and have them share from their experience, and let's stamp out, like Doug said, go through those stories in chapter 3. Let's look at the jaywalker. Yeah, you think he crazy? Weren't you doing that same crazy thing in your life, right? And go through Fred and Jim and all of those different things, those examples. And let's cite examples out of your life to see, do you parallel that? It may not have been the same exact thing. And after we go through that process, and by then, when we get to, and I love when we get to chapter 5 and we start talking about step 3, because we say after those ABCs, those propositions, and then saying being convinced, we are now at step 3. See, the book, I just love it, man, the way it goes through that process of taking us through it step by step and then saying, okay, you've admitted you were powerless. Okay, you've admitted now that, you know, you've become willing to believe. Even if you don't believe yet that there's a power, you're now willing to believe because what? Because of that ass whooping you took in step 1, right? That now, okay, I know I need some power. I've admitted I need some power. I'm willing to seek it. And so now I have to realize that I'm that actor. I need to know that I'm the person that's been trying to run the show. That all his life, that it hasn't been everybody else, it's always been about me. That I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, self-seeking, self-delusion, self-pity, right? All of those things. And by the time I get to that and it says selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our trouble. Right. And so once I go through all this, and I know I'm seem to be circling around your question about steps 4 and 5, but it's always impossible for me to get to 4 and 5 without doing 1, 2, 3. And once I do 1, 2, 3, and then being convinced, and like Carla says in the book, it talks about after we do that third step prayer, and as a group, we like to do it as a group on our knees. It's not required, except I like to do it on my knees because there's some humility that comes in when I'm in that position. When I'm not in this position of you know, I'm the man. You know, I like getting down there with other like-minded people. who are seeking the same thing. There's a certain energy and a certain power in that. And when we do that step, that third step, and we pray together and we meditate for a while, we stay on our knees for a while until it hurts a little bit, and then, you know, and you hear people crying around you, and everybody doesn't feel the same thing, because I'm a good pretender. I want to act like I feel something. And so there have been some years where I haven't felt nothing. There have been some years where I felt a very profound thing. But the main thing is the seeking. It's about the process. It's about the seeking. You know, it's about that willingness to try. You know, and that's what I always try to tell the people I sponsor. It's the seeking, man. Your columns, when you finally get to that fourth step, your columns don't have to be the exact and stuff, you know, because some people I know that, well, Ronald, I need to rewrite this because my columns weren't straight and I was, you know, or I can't spell good, or I can't do. I remember a couple of the people in my early workshop, they couldn't read. They weren't, you know, they really, and so we had to read to them. We got recommended tapes to them, you know, that they could go through. And I said, look, when you write your inventory, it doesn't matter that you can't spell that guy's name or whatever, or you can't remember. Just put down the guy at the store, or that girl in the second grade, whoever it was, and it doesn't matter about spelling, because guess what? You don't hand your inventory to somebody. You're going to read it. So as long as you understand it, and that you can, you know, you can read it to whoever it is, and you remember what it was you were writing, I don't care if it's hieroglyphics, if it's shorthand, if it's whatever, just write something down. And then let's get down to the confession, the fifth step. And then we pray before we do the fifth step, and then we go into it. I try to do it as it's outlined in the book. I don't like to put any special things on it or whatever. Everything that we've tried to take through people has been drawn directly from the big book. The seven areas of self that are in the third column. Those areas of myself that were affected that make me pissed off at you. That make me resent you because you've harmed my pocketbook or my personal relations or my self-esteem or my pride or my ambition or my security. Those things, right, or my sexual relationships. And I need to take a look at those things, and then I need to go to that forecast because I need to do a searching process to see what's the part. What's my part in this? And oftentimes, it's like what Doug says, sometimes it's just the fact that I don't want to let it go because I think that you're going to be off the hook. Well, I'm the one taking the poison waiting for you to die, right? I'm the one that's suffering over here while you... And so sometimes that's all it is, and I need to tell people, look, let it go. Let that weight go. You know, you've been holding on to for 25 years with this guy, this kid, Bruce Billingsley, who used to bully me in school back when I was in junior high school, and I hated him because he made me feel weak, and I had to run to the bus all the time so he wouldn't take my money, and they terrorized me. And then we're at the high school reunion 30 years later, and there's a guy sitting at my table, and I look at his name tag, and it's Bruce Billingsley. And I look at him, and he looked normal, right? He didn't look like a monster. He wasn't particularly big or, you know, whatever. But I'm looking at him, man, and then I share with the man, do you remember how you used to, oh, man, I'm sorry about that. Somebody used to do that to me. And the whole power, it was poof. Right, you know, and it was just like I construct these things that hold me hostage, the prison of my thinking, right? Because the big book describes it so well, where it talks about that's what we're seeking to be relieved from when we do that third step prayer, right? It talks about, you know, relieve me from the bondage of self, you know, not from the bondage of alcohol. Relieve me from the bondage of self. And so I hearken back to that when I talk to people and we do that fifth step. And it's so important and so vital and tied in with this whole sponsorship thing that's what I'm trying to do for people. That's what I'm trying to emote. That's what I'm trying to transmit to the people that I sponsor, that it's all about the bondage of self and being relieved from that. And so let's get to know each other. Let's get to know what makes us, you know, what are those things in me that have me shackled to me? And if I can't do that as a sponsor and I can't point you in the right direction, then I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Thank you.
Just one more thing. You know, just to add to that, that it makes a very, it changes the sponsorship relationship later on when they learn that. It's like that they've 10th stepped, they've taken in, before they call, instead of calling asking me to solve something or to help them figure out their part in something, they've done a 10th step, they've done another little inventory, and then they're ready to call and talk to me about how this, you know, we're like a few steps ahead now because they've internalized the process. You know, and again, not a technical, we're not technicians, we're practitioners. But it is there in the book, that process is laid out in the book and enhanced or elaborated on in the 12 and 12. I love the 12 and 12, but it's helpful when we lay out the tools and then the sponsee picks them up. Just like when my sponsor handed me the tool, I have to pick it up. It's not about being dependent forever on having to have my sponsor solve my problem. Initially, when we're new, yes. But and then we share, but it becomes different. It just becomes different. So I just want to add that.
Mm-hmm. Hi, my name's Julia. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Julia.
And
Julia.
I want to thank all of you for being up there. And my question is, could each of you tell us how you handle a sponsee who, A, relapses once, or B, relapses repeatedly?
do not what?
How do you handle a sponsee who A, relapses once, B, relapses repeatedly? That's my question.
I've had a few sponsees that relapse repeatedly, and what I usually do is say, look, I want to make this clear. You can call me anytime. I want to help you, but it doesn't appear that my sponsorship is working for you. So I would say either go out and drink until you really need to stay sober or get another sponsor because there's a lot of people around who might be a better mix for you than me. Sometimes they're offended and sometimes they get it, you know, but I've had people that really got successful after they left me.
Frankly, I beat them. No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That was in my head. I was just like, that's an interesting question because there's no one thing that I do. You said first, the first response was to the person who relapses once, and then there's the person who relapses continuously. I'm kind of like Doug on the person who relapses continuously. You know, I give them the option. I say, well, look, you know, it seems that whatever it is that we're doing may not be helping you. And so you might need to change up. I don't know if it's a matter of changing up with sponsorship or whatever. You know, I've never, you know, and I know the book says that sometimes you tell people that you know, they need to work with somebody else or you just, you know, release them or you do whatever. I've never told anybody that they stop calling me. I've never told anybody that I'm not going to be your sponsor anymore. If you don't do this, I'm not going to be your sponsor anymore. I've never laid down any edicts or any kind of ultimatums, nothing like that. I've never told anybody that. I just asked them to examine what is it that you were doing or have been doing that. But you know, that's just asking the patient to, you know, diagnose themselves. You know, but isn't that what this comes down to anyway? That Alcoholics Anonymous is always about a self-diagnosis process. It's a matter of me being a mirror. You know, I'm trying to be the best mirror I can for you and have you look at yourself honestly. I'm not going to sugarcoat nothing. I'm going to just try to point out facts to you about if you weren't calling me, if you weren't doing certain things that we had talked about, that we had agreed upon, you know, I will point those things out. I will try to be just this honest mirror and ask, are you willing? Are you willing to do whatever it takes to stay sober? All right, these are some of the things that I would recommend that you do in order to, you need, you know, and then I'll say some things, I'll do whatever. But it's, you know, it's always, as they say, when the pupil is ready, the teacher will appear. Oftentimes, the pupil ain't ready. You may be ready. As the teacher, you can be ready all you want. But if the pupil's not ready, I can't be a good guide if you're really not ready. As long as you come with that willingness, and that's the key to everything in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Willing, you know, all that stuff about acceptance is the key. No. For me, willingness is the key. You know, because if I bring some willingness to the table, I always got a chance. Soon as I stop being willing, I'm done. And so that's what I look for in somebody. And that's the way I respond to it, be it relapsing once, relapsing numerous times. The cool thing about alcoholism, and I said this to somebody else, that alcoholism is a disease that is so incomprehensible. So you really can't understand it, that most people cannot understand it. And who is the person that can't understand it the most? The alcoholic. And that's me. As a sober alcoholic and as a sponsor, I sometimes forget just how fatal and how cunning and powerful the disease of alcoholism is. And somehow I think that when a person comes in, they're just supposed to get it. They're just supposed to automate. And I forget those times I relapsed. I forget those times in 1985 that I relapsed twice before I came back before the light came on. And so I just continue to try to be there for people. And I know when they're ready.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, first, I've never let somebody go because they drank. Okay, 2 minutes? Okay. I've never let somebody go because they drank. I always tell them, you are always welcome. It is never, never, ever a question of are you welcome to come back into AA or into my sponsorship. But it's can you? Are you going to be able to? Are you going to be able to get the kind of traction you need to be able to come here? Now, the second thing, I have said to people, this is what we're doing here is not working. If they're calling me and they're screaming at me and asking me to fix it and doing that kind of thing, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. You're not listening. When I find myself trying to raise my voice over theirs, or something, I've said, now, listen, we take turns. You be quiet now. I talk, then you talk. And when I'm saying things like that, it's crazy. And I say, you know what? I'm not even going to cut you out of my life, but or my heart. But we got to do something different. So if you want to, then we will. But it's also when someone's new, that's where these things like making if they're willing and they're just not getting it yet. Because man, I know I remember times when I was in my own way and I couldn't get out of it, but I wanted to be here. Make some coffee, stack some chairs, dump some ashtrays. Are you willing to be here in the middle while this is taking, while this is getting set? And if they are, if they're doing that, and if they're standing in the back, if they've screamed at me and then now we're at the meeting and they're standing in the back scrolling their phone after I've asked them to stack some chairs, man, you're telling me right now with the way, with your actions, that you don't care, and I cannot be more invested in this than you. And it's not a decision I've made; it's an observation I've made, and so I go with that. But you are always welcome, anyway.
All right, so for everybody that wants to thank the speakers, they're going to be here on the left side of the stage immediately after the meeting.